welcome to the Happy Ramp podcast. I am Ted Kluck, joined as always by Barnabas Piper and not by Ronnie Martin. You know what we used to call him back in the old neighborhood, Pipe?
What was that?
We used to call him part-time. We used to call him Ronnie Part-Time Martin.
Part-Time Martin. That's really good. Yeah, it's like all day Adrian Peterson, except the opposite.
PT, man. Yeah, PT for short, you know. His friends called him PT. Everybody else called him part-time. But it was because you just couldn't count on him. You know what I mean? You couldn't count on this guy. He would be there one week and then gone the next, like tweeting pictures of a beach or whatever. You know what I mean?
Yeah, posting pictures of – the nice thing was when he posted that picture, at least he left his feet out of it. So it wasn't like the feet beach pic. But yeah, it was a picture of a coffee cup and beach saying, "This is my view for the next week," or something like that, which is better than staring at a USB microphone, I guess.
Yeah, because you know what? The last thing in the world I want to look at is a picture of some dude's feet. You know what I mean? Some old middle-aged dude's feet. And the feet that have been in like dress socks. You know what I mean?
And nobody has pastier legs than pastors either. Like they are translucent. They are so pasty. I don't know what it is. There's something about the pastoral role that just takes the melanin right out of the legs.
Dude, it's all the slacks. It's all the slack wearing, you know?
Hey, although Ronnie doesn't strike me as the slacks wearing type.
No, what is our friend part-time wear to the office on a daily basis?
He wears whatever jeans are slightly looser than skinny jeans. So they're like the tapered jeans, but they're not like your little sister's jeans.
Yeah, like there's a little bit of a wrinkle in them, you know what I mean? You could sit down in them without cutting off circulation to the rest of your body.
You could crouch down and pick up dropped keys without splitting them, that kind of, those jeans, but they're cut kind of like skinny jeans.
No, he's wearing that, and is he rocking like a button down or what are we looking at on top, man? Or like an ironic t-shirt of some kind?
I feel like he wears long sleeves year round. I don't know if that's true, but he strikes me as a long sleeves year round guy.
Pipe, here's what's funny about that. That is absolutely true. And he's a jackets year round guy.
Oh, it could be
93 degrees in July, and he's wearing like a military jacket.
Okay,
you know what I mean?
And so the two shirt styles. Now, one of these I'm fairly certain about, and that is just your standard flannel, like your man's man flannel, not like your cowboy shirt or like the picnic table cloth flannel, but like a real flannel. The other one is like the Jack Bauer shirt, you know, where it's like a. It's got like the three buttons on the front, but it doesn't have a collar. It's sort of long underwear material, possibly.
Yeah.
That I feel like those two would be standards.
That kind of thing in the winter, maybe. Yeah.
Yeah. That's a layered look because then you can roll the flannel sleeves up over that.
That's it, man. That's it. Dude, I think you're close, man. I think you're right on. You know,
I'm sure he loves having his style guessed at by his podcast hosts while he's off. You know, tanning his translucent legs.
Yeah, well, you know what? You're going to lay on the beach and take pictures of your gross old man feet. We're gonna do this about your clothing.
Exactly. You earned it.
That's the way the game is played. Well, Pipe, I'm a little worked up about something else, man. I'm going to get right into the content here. And you, thank God, man, you finally said it. You wrote a blog post yesterday or 2 days ago, I don't know, at some point about how Christian dudes need to stop calling their wives hot in front of other people, right?
I did write that post, yes.
This is a phenomenon that has long incensed me because of how awkward it is.
It's the worst.
Yeah, dude, suss that out. Talk about the situations where it happens, and I'll share some things, and we'll just suss this thing out.
All right, so you used the word awkward, and I think that is the starting point for this. I mean, you can get into objectifying women and those kinds of things, all legitimate sides of this. The real thing is if somebody tells me that their wife is hot, there's one of two responses, both of which are wrong.
Yeah.
I can agree with them, and if I do so out loud, I'm probably earning myself possibly a punch in the face.
Yeah, you're like, hey, you know, man, I'm glad you finally said it, because Judas, we've all been thinking the same thing for years. Yeah.
No joke, she's a smoke show. Or the other is to disagree with him and be like, I don't know, man, like, maybe a 4 out of 10. And that's probably more likely to earn you a punch in the face. And so when somebody says that, I suspect most guys are just simply not thinking. They're trying to honor their wives and, you know, talk them up, which is good. That's a great mindset to have. However, calling your wife hot calls attention to one thing and one thing only, and it is physical attractiveness, which leaves it up to me to decide whether you are right or wrong, and that's none of my business. You should think your wife is hot. You should not ask me to decide whether or not your wife is hot.
Dude, you said it. It's a great mindset to be in. And you know what? It's also kind of implied in the whole marriage gig, right?
Yes.
Like, you married this broad 15 years ago. I assume you think she's hot, you know? Like, you don't have to...
There are ways to communicate that actually do respect your wife. That's the thing, is like calling her hot is probably the – I mean, there are less respectful ways to do it, but
yeah.
It is on the low end of the totem pole. It's low brow. Like if you called her lovely or beautiful or amazing or incredible or marvelous or talk about how much you respect her or how much you like you need her in your life, like all of those things talk about her as a person. And they can include physical beauty. If you call somebody beautiful, usually it implies outside and inside. You call somebody lovely, that speaks to their personality as well as how they look. But it's not just a straight up, like, when you say hot, you're talking about a 1 to 10 scale.
That's it, man. That's
like
it.
You're simply, cars are hot. Like, you see a new Ferrari roll by, you're like, that is a hot ride. But
dude, let me ask you this, man. Because here's part of my beef with this whole thing. I want to ask you, what context do you see this in? Because I see it sometimes when, you know, there's a guy, he's up front, he's speaking, and it seems like part of the standard shtick nowadays is to give a little shout out to your lady and tell the audience how hot she is, such that everyone just goes, oh, you know what I mean? What a sweetheart. What a lovely man he is to think of his wife. You know, and it just seems so contrived to me. It seems like just a little rhetorical device to get people to think you're a real sweetheart.
Yes, I think that is it. And then you see the same thing roll over onto social media where people, you know, hashtag date night.
Hashtag date night, yeah.
And then like hashtag hot wife, hashtag hot wife, hot life, hashtag smoke show, hashtag, you know, whatever. Like I see these things. These are not just me making stuff up to puff up my own point. And honestly, when I see that, and okay, I guess it could be that I'm the shallow one here, and I'm the only one who thinks this way. But when I see somebody call out their wife as hot, I have to suppress the instinct to decide whether or not I agree with them, because it's not my business to agree with them or disagree. It is their business to think their wife is hot.
I would even venture that you can't suppress the instinct. You know what I'm saying? It's humanly impossible. If some dude is showing you a picture on, you know, on Instagram about his hot wife, he's inviting you to judge.
Yeah, and I feel like now I have received lots of responses from this. Now, granted, most of them are on Facebook, which is where all the Trumpians hang out, and the let's just say sort of the dregs of society comment on Facebook things, the dregs of Christian commenting society. And a lot of people missed the point of the whole article because my favorite response was –
did you get heat for this?
Oh, I got – the vast majority of people were like, thank you. Thank you for saying what we all feel about the awkwardness. But there were two responses, one of which was absurd and the other of which I thought was – I may write a follow-up post on because it was actually intriguing. Right. So the first one, the absurd one is – but my wife is hot.
Oh my gosh, dude.
Just face palm right
there. Completely, which is how hot my wife is.
That's right. But she is hot. Yes, that's
dude, who is this? Who is this commenter? Tom Brady? You know? Yeah. Really, I mean.
I mean, the thing is, I don't even think Tom Brady's ever publicly said his wife is hot. And she's actually, like, makes money off of her looks. And so it's. Yeah, that one just made me laugh because
did he include a picture of his wife, this guy?
No, thankfully he didn't because I'm not sure that would have helped. And judging by his picture, he would have had to really outkick his coverage to have a wife who would fit the bill. But the second response, and this was an interesting one, was, well, what do we do with Song of Solomon and in light of publicly praising the attractiveness of a spouse? And I guess the short response that I have for that is there's a distinct difference between calling your wife hot and writing a Holy Spirit-inspired allegorical poem.
Right, like beautiful piece of literature about your wife.
And and co-authoring it with your spouse, where you're writing right. a response back and forth about the beauties of romance and marriage as a whole. That's different than hashtag hot wife. Sorry.
Hashtag hot wife, or like standing on a stage and throwing out some flip comment so that everyone says, ah.
Right. And the thing is, when I hear a pastor commend or compliment his wife, let's say pastor, conference speaker, whatever, from up front, some of those things sound they're really nice, because they're saying, I really want to, you know, my wife is home with two sick kids and has allowed me to be here, whatever else. Like, that's a thankfulness for a sacrifice.
Thoughtful. Like, there's some thoughtfulness to it.
As opposed to, like, I'm here with my hot bride. First of all, she has not been your bride since the day you got married. She is now your wife. Bride is a very short-lived thing. Second of all, don't call her hot. Like, that's really what this all boils down to. Just stop. For the love of all of our ears and awkwardness, stop.
Dude, you know how this hits me? It's sort of like those guys, like, who, you know, on Valentine's Day, they buy a, you know, 36 flowers or whatever, because the rest of the year they're crappy husbands. You know what I mean? It strikes me as the same kind of thing. Like, if I threw you a little hot comment on, social media, it makes up for the fact that I'm a, you know, non-attentive, you know, cretin the rest of the time.
Yes. And I will say, I felt very validated by the number of married women who gave a thumbs up to this post, either on Twitter or Facebook or whatever, and just said, thank you. Because that means that there are lots of women who do not feel like this is something that honors them. Like, they're not sitting there going, oh, I wish my husband would do that publicly.
Yeah.
Like, you're not making other people jealous. You're not proving anything except your own relative shallowness, I think.
You're making your wife feel weird.
Yes.
You know?
And everybody else.
Imagine if, like, the shoe was on the other foot. You know, our wives are on Twitter all day going, ah, that Barnabas, he's so hot. You know, he's a real dime piece that I snagged. You know?
Oh, dime piece. You listen to the Bill Simmons podcast, I take it.
Yep. Yep.
Oh, exactly. Yeah. If you were on the other side, you'd be like, hey, why don't you ease up on that with the hot husband thing? That's a little weird.
Exactly. Because no dude, no dude our age, besides like Brad Pitt and Tom Brady, are actually hot. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean,
the list is small, is what I'm saying.
It's very true, and we all wish we could be them, but we're not.
We do. I mean, we're not.
And which
we're
means
humans.
Yeah, we are equally as shallow as women who worry too much about looks. They just take the heat for it.
That's right, man. The body image thing runs both ways. You know?
Can you imagine? Have you ever seen Tripp and Tyler's video about Twitter in real life?
No.
Where it's two guys sitting in a coffee shop, and they're basically talking in tweets, or one of them is talking in tweets and the other guy's pointing out how dumb it is.
Uh-huh.
Imagine doing that with the hot wife thing. Like, you walk into the nice Italian restaurant you're taking your wife to for hashtag date night.
Uh-huh.
And you just shout to the whole room about how hot she is. You just walk in, you're like, here with my hot date. Check it out.
Yeah. That'd be great. She'd feel so validated.
I know. She would smack you and run away. Like, maybe one in a million women would feel like that was a really respectful, honoring thing to do.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, interesting, man. I'll keep me posted on the kind of feedback you're getting on that. I was really glad you wrote it. And it was one of those things where I was like, dang it, I wish I'd written that. You know what I mean? Because I've been thinking it for years. Like,
That's a great compliment as a writer. If somebody else says, I wish I had written that, because you feel like, There's a sense of validation.
Dude, totally. And it was right place, right time, man, for sure. So,
I got the Tim Challey's stamp of approval on it too. He linked to it, which is always nice for blog traffic as well.
Dude, no way Challey's approves of that thing, huh? Wow,
that's right. So I know that, the conservative reformed crowd thinks much of not calling your wife hot.
Dude, I feel like those are some of the biggest perps on this thing, though. You know?
Well,
I feel
like maybe it'll come around because Challey's got behind it.
Maybe if Challey's tells them what to do, man, they'll shut it down on the hotness comments.
I mean,
it's like those like T-shirts or like bumper stickers that say "I love my wife." You know what I mean? Have you seen this? It's like, again, man, kind of, I don't know, kind of implied in the whole
I just
the fact that you're married to your wife.
There is a Chris Rock bit, and I feel like I've brought it up on this podcast before, where he talks about people bragging about things they're supposed to do, mm-hmm. and they talk about how they're, you know, I take care of my kids, and he's like, "What, you want a bleeping cookie? You're supposed to take care of your kids." That's exactly. That's kind of where this falls into.
Indeed, man. Indeed. Yeah, you want a pat on the back. You want us to think you're a big sweetie. Well, dude, let's move on, man. We got a really really thoughtful question, actually, from a listener. We did something we hadn't done in a while, which is give a shout out to everybody and ask for what they wanted ranted about. And let me just take this moment to thank all the people on Twitter and all the people that follow us on iTunes and even Facebook. Allegedly, we have a Facebook page. And so thanks to everybody who's listening and like
absolutely
like throwing us ideas and all that stuff, man. It's really fun.
This is far more interesting because we have listener participation.
Oh, so true, man. So true. So this was the question, and it was really interesting. Accountability partners, right? Like, do we have them? Does it work? Is that just a buzzword? Is that just a thing that you feel like you're supposed to have as a Christian dude? She just wanted us to riff on accountability partners. And I'm going to take this in a little different direction, man, because I think maybe what the listener was angling for was, you know, for us to do some slashing and burning of the concept of accountability partners and how
I'm sure.
dumb and antiquated or whatever. But I have to tell you, man, it's weird, the semantics here. But so there's this guy, you know, he's definitely like best friend category. But we talk every week and we talk about accountability type stuff and also a bunch of other stuff. And, you know, that aspect of it probably ratcheted up like 5 years ago or so. But I'm completely like thankful for this guy. You know what I mean? Because and I don't know if you kind of call it just like having a good friend or accountability or whatever, but you know, those sin kinds of questions and those issues and those things that you can tell somebody else, like, yeah, I was thinking about this, or, you know, I was disappointed in myself for that or whatever. Like, we totally have that. So as much as I would love to sit here and like kind of bash the concept of accountability partners, I think, you know, I'm really grateful for this guy. And
I think what you're talking about is where accountability is at its best, and that is accountability is really just holding a friend to a standard that they should live by, and reciprocal, which is allowing yourself to be held to. And if you have healthy friendships, which is something I think that a lot of people don't have, which is why the accountability partner sort of construct has been maybe overdone.
Pushed. Yeah.
You just have friends who you can go to and say, "Hey, I'm going through this right now." Either anything. It could be a depression struggle. It could be a sin thing. It could be a marriage thing. And just say, "Hey, can you guys pray for me? Help me out. Check in on me.
Ask me about this again."
Yeah,
you know,
and a good friend will. And you give permission to say, "Hey, if you see me stepping out of line, you know, grab me by the collar, either literally or figuratively, and shake some sense into me." And that's friendship. Now, there have been times in my life where I did the more like construct accountability partner, where it's like, we're going to meet on Thursday mornings at X o'clock to talk through these things. And that, I think that can have value, but I think almost inevitably it falls into the go around the circle with a small group of people. Everybody admit to the same sins you admitted to last week.
Yeah, you know what? I'm struggling to have my quiet time. You know,
if you're in college, you're looking at porn. If you're like, it's every single week. It's the same thing. And the guys are all like, "Well, I guess you shouldn't do that anymore. And let's do this again next week."
Yeah.
And so there's, but it's missing the sense of like real investment by me to stop sinning and by them to help me stop sinning. There's not a sense of like, I really care about your soul, so let's dig into this. There's not the check-ins between week to week. You just sort of know that going into Thursday morning at 6 o'clock, you just got to have like fess up. It becomes almost like a confession to the priest kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know, go and sin no more, my son, kind of thing. And that aspect of the accountability, I mean, anytime the accountability is not like a willing desire to grow out of whatever you're struggling with, it's not really accountability. It's just kind of a silly construct.
Exactly. Dude, let me ask you this, man. I feel like, you know, since I've been around or whatever, the whole about accountability thing has always been in the context of like dudes and porn and all that.
Yes.
Like, do chicks have accountability partners? You know what I mean? And if so, like, what for? You know what I'm saying?
You know, I've asked various women over the years that same kind of thing, and a lot of it, from what they have told me, is there's a very different relational dynamic there, where like if you found out that I was doing something I shouldn't do, whether, I mean, it could be a sexual sin, it could be a, you know, thieving, cheating kind of thing. Mm-hmm. As a guy, your instinct would be to get in my face and say, knock that crap off. Like, yeah, you need to stop. And there's sort of an aggressiveness to it, and sort of a bit of a fighting mentality. We're going to fight against the sin. We're going to fight against the person sinning, whatever it is.
Yeah.
And I think with my understanding, not speaking from the perspective of a woman, is that the relational dynamic there is different because there's a lot more sharing. Mm-hmm. But I'm not sure there's a lot of confrontation. And I don't know if that's a healthy thing or an unhealthy thing. I don't know if that's an innate relational dynamic or again, something where it's like we just don't go there. We don't press in and say, you need to quit that. But I don't think it's the same kind of thing where it's like, get together Thursday morning to talk about this specific subset of sins.
Right. Yeah, I don't see that either, man. And I don't know. It's just an interesting, like, church culture difference between, like, you know, men and women, men's culture and women's culture.
But I also think, I mean, I do think what you said about accountability being in the context of like anything, sexual sin, porn, lust, whatever, I think that has tainted the word accountability.
Yeah.
Because it cheapens it from holding me accountable to, I don't know, my character, I guess, as a whole.
Right.
You know, like we will hold somebody accountable by putting, you know, covenant eyes on their computer, but not like, hey, just don't be a tool. Like, be more humble or whatever it is. And those are things that we need accountability for as well, because those are the more like moment-to-moment struggles.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Like you can be a lifelong tool and nobody's really calling you on that. You know what I mean?
And you can be a lifelong tool about never having looked at porn. So then you become a self-righteous prig.
Then you're an arrogant
tool. Yeah. You're just looking down on other people.
Who's probably lying anyway, you know?
Oh, I just assume any guy who says he hasn't looked at porn is lying.
Me too, man. Me too. All right, Pipe, let's go to the last thing, man. This is another great one. Was this like a listener thing, or did you come up with this?
This was it was inspired by listeners and readers, so it wasn't a direct question.
Yeah. So you and me, in our writing and in our talking, you know, we use some sarcasm. We do satire. Gut Check, my little publishing company, does a lot of satire. We've both been accused at times, and rightfully so, probably, of being snarky. So,
on occasion, yes.
Yeah, so the thought was we should discuss the difference between sarcasm, satire, and snark, and the place for each. And I just think this is a fabulous idea. I guess I'll start. I'll just start by talking about sarcasm. I feel like sarcasm is the thing that you discover in like middle school. You know what I mean? And it's like a... It's like a jolt of light from the heavens, and you go like, wait a minute, there's a way for me to deal with all this awkwardness and uncomfortableness I'm feeling because of the fact that I'm in sixth grade or whatever. And it's to just be sarcastic about everything. And for a while, that's really fun. And I think that's sort of like the marijuana, like the gateway drug of all these things. Like, you start with sarcasm. You know what I mean?
And being a sixth grader, you don't have a great sense of like nuance and timing,
you're just doing
healthy
it all
and unhealthy.
Time.
Yeah, it's just a fire hose of sarcasm.
It's a fire. It's a carpet bombing of sarcasm all the time. Dude, now suss out one of these other categories for me, though.
So the reason this jumped into my head was because I wrote the post about don't call your wife hot, and. And I did it in a fairly sarcastic manner, where I just sort of I poked fun at the context in which this is done and kind of how awkward it is.
Yeah.
And I had people who said, you're snarky, which I get on Twitter, you know, 7 times a week. Yeah. And then I had people who asked, is this satire? The answer is no, it's not satire because
it's like it's you literally saying what to do.
Right. Satire is like writing something fictional or writing something that isn't to talk about what is. You know, it's or to draw out a point. So like Babylon Bee is this website that was started a couple months ago and it's all Christian satire and they're doing a pretty good job with some pretty hilarious stuff. So they're drawing out points about things we can laugh at or things we should think about by writing satirical posts, so things that didn't happen to write about what did. That's satire.
Right.
Also what Gut Check does a lot of and well. And then snark is just sort of a tone. So right. It's like, and it can be really negative, or it can just be sort of like just a little bit biting.
A little bit of an edge to it.
Yeah. And so like, was the post that I wrote sarcastic? Yes, a little bit. Was it snarky? Yes, a little bit. It was not satire. And so I guess my thing is just, there are too many people who just don't get it. They don't have a sense of humor. They don't, they can't quite figure out how it works. So it's like they skipped the sixth grade or something and they never got the, they never got bit by the sarcasm bug. And so when it comes out, they're either offended because they think you're serious, or they're offended because they think you're making fun of somebody in a mean way.
And dude, they're offended because they just don't get it. Like, they don't know what's going on.
Yes.
It's like being in a room where everybody else is speaking French and you're speaking English, you know?
So is, I guess, the follow-up question is sort of what's the place of humor, particularly sarcasm and snark? Because satire, I think, satire is an art form. Like,
satire is pretty straightforward. Like,
it's like a genre.
It is. It's a genre. Absolutely. And I happen to think it's the most of the three. It's probably the most commendable, maybe. I don't know, because it takes the most time and you're I hate this word, but you're intentional about it. You know what I mean? Like you're setting out to try to do a thing on the page.
You can't flippantly do satire. You can't just sort of like flippantly toss out a satire line. Like satire is it's a story. It is a context. I mean, it's, you know, Stephen L. Trogi, former co-host of this show, has done some of those where he talk, you know, and it's a fictional context. I mean, there's craft that goes into that.
Right. Like actual work goes into it. You know, sarcasm is something that you can and probably often do just pull off conversationally, you know?
Yeah.
You know, you're throwing out sarcasm. If you're in the right, like, meeting with the right people or whatever, you're sitting by, like, the funny guy at work and you happen to be sitting by him at the staff meeting and you guys are slinging sarcasm back and forth and you know, those are the good moments, man. But yeah, like, there are people in the world who just don't have that gear at all, you know?
Yes.
At all. And it goes back to the earnest people thing we were talking about last week, man.
Yeah. Like, yeah, the ones who just – they either sort of shake their heads sadly because they feel bad that you are a sarcastic person, or they kind of get on their righteous high horse about it.
Yeah, like really, like pipe too far, you know. You ever had somebody tell you too far?
I have. Well, yes. Goodness sakes, yes. My favorite is, well, why don't you tell us what you really think?
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm always like,
I am.
Do you want me to go further?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I could be meaner, you know.
I was trying to find that balance between like having an edge and being a jackass. So I'm not sure here.
If you want me to disregard even trying to find that balance, I could do it.
And I mean, obviously, sarcasm is something that has to be wielded carefully because it can be hurtful,
right?
And it can definitely be a defense mechanism. Like it can be somewhere where, while that's helpful to kind of get yourself out of awkward situations, it's bad if you're sort of deflecting something you need to take more seriously, or if you're, you know, kind of downplaying something that needs actual thoughtful interaction. And I do that sometimes, you know.
I do too. Yeah. Guilty as charged, man. Or I think if you're using it to sort of, and this strikes at a spiritual issue. I mean, if you're using it to like, as a means of dealing with the world that doesn't involve Christ, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. So, you know, if your life is hard or your situation is, is difficult and you're just, you know, reacting to it by like hardening your heart and being bitter, and the bitterness, you know, manifests itself in all this sarcasm and snark, then, you know, then yeah, I think it is problematic.
But I do think that like snarkiness as a whole, so just sort of that like a little bit of an edge, that pointed edge on things, is something that if wielded well, is really a beneficial thing, because okay, so think about this. When you are if you want to attack something that you disagree with, so let's take our current political context,
right,
which is a hot mess of dog do. I mean, it is just the worst. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, yeah.
You can either describe it in all of the negative terms you know.
Right.
You can extricate yourself from it altogether and not engage. Or you can find a pointed, humorous way to address things, sure, which is a way to make points without sounding like a blowhard. And kind of engage people, and actually, so whether it's about Trump or Clinton or Sanders or Cruz, I realize Sanders and Cruz are kind of non-entities at this point, but that snarky edge, if not taken too far, is actually a really beneficial thing for making negative statements in a non-negative way.
Right. No, I'm with you, man. I'm with you 100%. Now, in this media saturated, everyone trying to be funny all the time environment we live in, would you agree with the following statement? There are a lot of people trying to be sarcastic / snarky that aren't any good at it.
Oh yes.
Do you see this?
Yes. And boy, it's like watching sixth graders on Twitter.
Yeah, that's true.
And a lot of people are like, they'll be like, Trump's an idiot. And you're like, that's not sarcasm. That's an insult. Like, yeah, that's not, there's nothing clever about name calling.
Right.
Like, that's not. I imagine Donald Trump thinks he's a witty, sarcastic person, when in fact he is just an insulting blowhard. so it's I think, and social media is, since everybody has an outlet, you just see people and you watch people and you're like, that was a really awful attempt at humor.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly, man. Exactly. So people are doing this who shouldn't be doing it.
Yes, and you see it a lot when people are imitating those who do it well. So
right.
So I mean, we've talked about Bill Simmons on this podcast before, and how he had a writing style. He sort of popularized a writing style 10, 12, 15 years ago.
Yeah.
That then like a banner crop of imitators came up after him and tried to do the same kind of thing,
right,
and most of them were horrific.
Exactly.
Like, there's a guy for I want to say CBS Sports who covers college football. What is his name?
I don't know.
Clay Travis. No. That's a singer, isn't it? I forget his name. But he's a guy who did the whole Simmons sort of snarky thing.
Yeah.
But he just is like a misogynist jerk face now, who's more like a Stephen A. Smith crossed with Bill O'Reilly. Kind of personality.
Yeah.
And you're like, that's what happens when you don't have this, you don't have the right balance of snark and an actual good perspective. That's the thing. It's like, it only works if you have something worth saying.
Well, dude, and nothing is going to work if you're just trying to do a shtick.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
If you're trying to do something that's not like manifestly yours, it's just not going to work. It's going to look lame, you know?
Yeah.
People are gonna like out it as lame because they can see.
And as somebody who really enjoys being snarky and funny and making other people laugh, when you are simply doing it to get a reaction, it always falls flat, or
that's
it
true.
Always crosses the line.
That's
because
true.
Because you're not gauging, like, you're not triangulating. Do I have something worth saying? Am I saying it in the right way? And am I being funny? You only have like one of those things, and it's, am I being funny? And that's not a real good gauge for a starting point.
No, man, I'm glad you said that. That's absolutely right. And yeah, let me be the first to admit, man, I'm a seasoned veteran of line crossing. You know what I mean? And you know when you do it and you feel horrible.
Yeah,
you know?
you immediately feel like, oh, what a
dude, you feel like, yeah, you feel like the biggest heel, and then the room stops and everybody gets all uncomfortable and you're like, yeah, I did it.
And then, I have I have written and said more apologies in my life for verbal line crossing as a joke. You know, it's always, yeah. I didn't mean it that way, but I really crossed the line.
Absolutely, man. Oh, that's the worst feeling.
Maybe we should apologize to listeners.
What's that?
Maybe we should just apologize, like a blanket apology for this podcast.
I used to do that all the time. I used to do it like every episode.
Yeah, I know. And maybe it's been a minute. Maybe we should now.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry for everything all the time.
Blanket apology for my words.
Actually, I don't think we said anything that horrible today, man. This is one of those that I can walk away from and feel pretty...
Well, if somebody is a Trump voter, I probably offended them, but I also don't feel too terribly bad about it because he's about to offend the rest of the country, so...
True, true. Yeah. Yeah, I think you can sleep well, man. Well, we have done our usual thing, which is to wander to and fro throughout these topics. It's been a blast. Thanks to the boys at Resonate Recording. As always, for making us sound good. Pipe, you're the business mogul. You're sort of the Trump of this podcast in terms of having like business things always in the hopper for us in terms of sponsors. So we're gonna have some new sponsorships here real soon to drop on people. Some new opportunities, some new ways to spend your cachiche.
To steward your funds.
Steward your funds to get your little Dave Ramsey envelopes out and start making it rain all over these sponsors of ours. So yeah, a couple of weeks we'll have some new things in that area. But Pipe, this has been fun, man. And until next time, Rachel the Held Evans.
Scripture and brain science agree. Meditating on God's word transforms us and reduces stress in our lives. I'm Jody Nisnik, host of So Much More, Creating Space for God, a scripture meditation podcast. And each week I give you space to hear God's word, listen to the Spirit, and pray about what's on your heart. And then we have a thoughtful conversation with guests to help us go deeper. Listen and subscribe at lifeaudio.com.